Did you know we have completely ad-free early access to all of our episodes? Well, we do. Not only that, but we have dozens of bonus episodes waiting for you. Head on over to patreon.com/ghosttownpod, and you can check it out for 7 days absolutely free. That's patreon.com/ghosttownpod.
A copycat heist gone wrong. I'm Rebecca Lieb.
I'm Jason Horton.
And this is Ghost Town.
The story of D.B. Cooper is got to be history's most notorious unsolved crime and mystery. And it has to be
so
up
cool.
There on the list.
It's so cool.
Because it's theoretically successful as far as anyone knows.
Well, it's successful in that he got money and he left the plane. Like, what more do you need, I guess, in success in that, like, he's never been found. The money has really – there's some bills that were recovered, I believe, but not all – not even close to all of them. The rumors surrounding him and his whereabouts, even his gender, it's like, yeah.
It's all a mystery, and mm-hmm. I think that's what makes it so special as far mm-hmm. as, like, mysterious, because it's a true crime, but not in the sense that nobody was murdered.
Yeah, but also there's the sexy parts of it where it's like – you know, the plane and, like, keeping the stewardess there and all the money and also the iconic drawing of his face. Like, all of that lends such a, like, fun air of mystery to it. And you're right. No one died.
I mean, maybe D.B. Cooper did. Who knows if he –
I'm going to pretend like he
I'm gonna assume,
didn't.
Yeah, I'm going to assume that he's at least is or was alive and well.
Yeah.
Listen, if you did all that and you got away with it, you deserve it. Keep the money.
Agreed. And call into us.
With that – you have copycats.
Mm-hmm.
Copycats aren't always as successful as the people that they see that they're like, wow, this person did it and seemingly got away with it.
Mm-hmm.
You know, if D.B. Cooper was like caught, they might mm-hmm. be like, nah, I don't know if I'm going to copycat this. In 1980, specifically, Glenn K. Tripp, he was one of those copycats. He attempted to follow in D.B. Cooper's footsteps at the Seattle airport and hijack a Boeing 727 Northwest Flight 608 headed to Portland.
It's a short flight. Again, like D.B. Cooper, one and done. But also, I also have empathy for this person because, yeah, I would do it. If you see someone and you kind of have, like, you know, conspiratorial delusions, you'd be like, that worked. Let's do it.
It's like prison escapes, like Alcatraz, yeah. Like escaping from Alcatraz. There's people that escape from Alcatraz. You don't know what happened to
them. Yeah, but they did it.
They did it. You know, some people say they probably drowned. I choose to say they're hanging out with D.B. Cooper and they got a timeshare in Boca.
The Raton.
Yeah. Glenn K. Tripp, he claimed to have a bomb and his demands were $100,000 and 2 parachutes.
Mm-hmm.
And according to check6.com, it's easy to feel sorry for these guys, said Marsha Roberts, who was a flight attendant aboard the hijacked plane. She says the boy, who was 17, was telling us how bad his life had been, how nothing had ever gone right for him.
Mm-hmm.
The stewardess slipped 3 Valiums into his drink.
Whoa.
And the plane never actually took off. Listen.
That's amazing. Oh, my God.
Yeah, I don't know why this isn't a movie or at least
a short
segment.
Film.
Yeah,
just give me a little bit. Because that's like... Whoa, we're not even going to take off. In fact, slipping this into your drink, we're going to take care of this right here on ground.
We also know the volume was flowing.
Ooh,
it was just around. Like, it's just like everyone.
I mean, that was the time, you know? If you weren't on volume, you were like, it's like, chill out.
You know, the ashtrays were right in the armrest, too.
Oh, hell yeah. One of the most terrified I've ever been was that my brother, who has a pilot's license, took me up in a Cessna, and there was an ashtray in the plane's door.
So you're like, this is the new plane.
Okay.
So after 10 hours, and obviously the Valium kicking in, he changed his demands.
Oh.
He released all 52 passengers. Now, his demands? 3 cheeseburgers and to be driven from the airport in a rental car by the 2 pilots that remained with him.
But like a sweet rental car.
And like cheeseburgers, he's like, let me tell you something.
Uh-huh.
Extra pickle. Don't skip.
Please, medium
pickle.
Rare, do not fuck with me. Sesame, seed, bun.
Yeah.
That's me. That's my hijacking.
10 hours on Valium, you might go from...
I also want to say that it was 3 Valiums.
3 Valium,
right?
And 3 cheeseburgers.
The ratio to Valium to cheeseburger is very impressive. Very impressive.
the FBI negotiator, Ron Boehner, he said the cheeseburgers would take a while.
Why?
Seattle has a no cheeseburger rule like this.
Trip. It's a different time.
Had responded, forget the cheeseburgers. You said before you get the plane, and you didn't. So you'd better get the car. This is your last chance.
This does sound like a 17-year-old where it's like, and I don't like my mom or my stepdad.
When the car arrived, Tripp exited and was captured by three FBI agents hiding under the plane. He held onto the briefcase, which supposedly held the bomb, was taken away. In the suitcase, a jacket.
Oh, what if it gets cold?
Yeah. You ever think about that?
Valium chill?
I got the Valium chills. He was convicted of first-degree kidnapping and extortion, sentenced to only 20 years probation. So it's a lot of probation, but it's still...
It's a whole lot of probation. But he's also 17, so he can't be convicted as an adult yet. So that's actually, like, I think I maybe understand that, even though I think maybe, like, a little jail time would have been good for this person.
I think it definitely would have, because he comes back for more.
Oh, no.
Oh, yeah.
Why am I so lenient on these people?
No, this is round. He comes back for more
cheeseburgers.
3 years later, January 20th, 1983, he tried hijacking the same flight as it approached Portland International Airport from Seattle. Instead of a suitcase, he had a shoebox, which is definitely, that's scary.
It's a downgrade.
Yeah, but it's scarier.
Sometimes. Yeah, well, yeah, it's like, anything, honestly, even when I was, like, in kindergarten, I'm like, what is in that shoebox?
Yeah.
Is it a diorama or my death? No.
It's always kind of, like, proof. Or yeah. Like, when you just, like, go through an old shoebox and you're just like, oh, this is bad.
Yeah, totally.
It's never like, oh, here's $1,000.
No, people don't store thousands of dollars in shoeboxes. You store finger bones. Yeah.
And all he wanted, though, is to be flown to Afghanistan after complaining that the U.S. was not helping his people. And he had not been able to see his wife and child there and claimed to have been in prison for the last 10 years. Obviously not true.
Yeah.
Are you starting to maybe piece together the state of mind of this person?
Yes, definitely. Yes.
So that's definitely a thing as I was going
through. So really this. The system failed him after that first try.
You know, I can't speak for what was going on as a, you know, I was only 30 in 1983. But the conversation of therapy is like, you know. No, buck up. And unfortunately, that's kind of like a lot of people, at least growing up, and, you know, the idea of going to therapy or seeking help or, you know, and even those therapies aren't always successful, granted. But sometimes the idea of therapy is it's a waste. It's quackery. People are going to think you're, you know, a nut.
Yeah.
Whatever the case may be. So it might have come in handy. Who's to say?
You know, what's going to make people think that you're an even bigger nut is – hijacking a plane twice.
And saying, hey, listen, I need to see my family. They're Afghanistan. In Afghanistan.
I have the shoebox to prove it.
At 4:30 p.m. after a three-hour standoff, he agreed to unload half of the 35 passengers, which I gather is he wasn't looking to hurt anybody. I don't know what his
– which is kind of a redeeming quality of this story.
I don't know what the end goal would be if things went differently, if he succeeded. What was the next move? I don't know. That's not really super clear. But he exited the plane via the exit ramp. Two FBI agents were standing on top of each other's shoulders. Mm-hmm. They climbed through the cockpit window. And according to a July 1983 article from the New York Times, at that time, the captain allowed for the security door to the cabin to be opened. Immediately, an agent appeared and confronted the subject, who at the time approached the door holding a box. Pretty scary.
Yeah.
And also, he's like, not the age makes a difference, but now he's 20. So like,
yeah.
There might be more an error of kind of like, this seems like more of a credible threat. Not to say that age is really anything to do with it. But
sure, yeah.
The agent immediately yelled, freeze, FBI. Classic.
Yeah.
At the time, the subject made a sudden motion as if to throw the box, and the agent fired one shot, killing Glenn K. Tripp. And I never really found a lot of information on him, of news articles or audio or anything like that, but I did find one news clip that's part of a bunch of other news clips that we're going to play right now.
I'm Tracy Berry.
The drama in Portland is over, and the hijacker who seized an airplane with 41 people aboard at Portland's International Airport is dead. The passengers have been released unharmed. Authorities now say that the man, whom they still have not identified, hijacked the Boeing 727 shortly before 2 o'clock this afternoon as it descended to Portland's airport. The hijacker claimed to have a bomb inside a shoebox and was demanding that the pilot fly that plane to Afghanistan. Well, for 2.5 hours, the plane sat on a remote runway of the airport with FBI agents negotiating from outside the plane. Then, around 4:30 this afternoon, federal agents stormed that plane and shot the hijacker to death in that takeover. Once again, the hijacking ordeal at Portland's International Airport is over. The hijacker is dead. No passengers or crew have been injured.